Jets fans, it's Dr. Emma here, ready to host your preview of our round just gone, round 15, which saw us beat the Central Coast Mariners at home 1-0. It was very fun. Because of this crazy compact schedule we've got in the summer of football, we're also going to preview our game coming up against Perth Glory on Sunday afternoon. To do that with me, because I'm good, but I can't do it all on my own, I've got two Jetstream panelists here. I have Luke and Matt. Firstly, let's say hi to Luke.
Hi, Dr. Emma. I'm glad you said the game was fun, because I think I aged about 20 years in that second half.
Oh, you stole my line. I said that in the post-match video that I was 10 years older thanks to that last 10 minutes. It was a little bit hectic.
Yeah, I felt the same. I think there was a lot of watching through my fingers in the second half. So I can definitely feel the grey hairs coming on.
Matt, how much older are you after the game?
Got plenty of grey hairs anyway. Went with a Central Coast supporter again, Hayal. Almost had to use his walking frame to get back out to the car.
So rather aged, but you're well other than that, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Beautiful.
Right, well, let's go to the opening question then. So this one's inspired by something I saw on Twitter a few weeks back. Someone was saying that when they were a kid, they used to think that Jägermeister was like a posh ladies' drink because their mum used to always drink it in a fancy glass in the evenings.
Oh,
and then
boy.
When they grew up, they realised Jägermeister, in fact, not very classy. So my question for you tonight... Question for you tonight is, what's something that you thought was fancy when you were a kid that now as an adult you realise it totally is not? Lukey, you want to go first?
So, when I was growing up, I always was watching TV and movies and stuff and all that good stuff. They always made out that caviar is this really good stuff. Like it's like elite level, you know, posh people food. And then I tried it, and it was horrific. I don't get it. What, like, I hate it. The texture, the fact that you think, oh, man, I've eaten all this sushi, I'm good to go now. And you're like, oh, hang on, there's another stupid piece of egg, fish egg in my mouth that's bleh. So for me, it's caviar.
It definitely sounds nicer when you call it caviar than when you call it fish eggs. I think maybe fish eggs should have given it away.
Well, like, I don't know. I avoid those ones now at the sushi train and stuff.
Can't you ever done the caviar, Matt?
Sorry, I'm not a big seafood eater at all, so no, I'll step back from that one.
Good call. Caviar's gross. Matt, do you have something that you thought was very fancy when you were a kid that now you realise totally is not?
I actually brought this opening question up with my partner, and she brought up a couple of really good answers that were... pretty much in line with what I had to say. I think that the big one was pickled onions. Pickled onions with the toothpick through them are not fancy at all, but everyone used to think they were fancy in the 80s.
So not just you
Didn't
as a kid, like
colour.
All of society.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, you'd get to any type of party that have French onion dip, that have little cubes of cheddar cheese, and that have... pickled onions, like white, green, or red, with a toothpick through it, and that was like I thought that was fancy as shit.
Yeah, I've realised this question's kind of messed up for those of us who were kids in the 80s because there was a lot of weird stuff going on then.
I'm glad you specified the 80s because I don't remember any of that stuff in the 90s. So pickled onions, I've never heard anyone call them fancy. So yeah, I'm glad I missed that one.
Society caught up quickly. Did you have another one, Matt? You sounded like you had a bit of a list there with you and your partner.
Oh, look, I mean, I don't even remember this, but she was talking about a clarinetist called Acapulco or Acapulco. Acapulco, I've just been corrected again, like, that apparently got put on for every single dinner party they had. I was actually made to listen to a little bit of it. Like, I had to listen to a little bit of it, like, before we started tonight, and I can't see how it was fancy, but I can imagine how people that weren't fancy thought that it was fancy. So
I don't know. I feel like anyone who's like cool. Listening to clarinet music is a little bit posh. I think your missus might actually be a little posh.
I'll let her know.
That sounds crazy posh to me. I'm still impressed. Well, mine's actually
just Google Ackerbilk.
Oh yeah, because I totally can spell that.
It's as it sounds.
Not helping. Anyway, we'll move on. My answer is a little bit sad because I answered the Twitter discussion and everyone was like, "Oh, I feel so sorry for you." I was raised kind of poor, no, very poor. Let's be honest. I have 9 brothers and sisters, so you know, raised very poor. My grandma used to cut out We had 1 TV, thank you. We all sat around it. We didn't have enough money for couches, but we could sit on the floor and watch it. Anyway, my grandma used to cut out and send me the ads for those porcelain collector dolls. They must have been in, like, you know, Reader's Digest or the magazine that she got regularly. And they were, you know, mail order, send away the coupon and get the doll. Grandma used to cut one of those out every week and mail them to me and my sister, and we had them in a binder, and we used to like flick through and marvel at how beautiful the dolls were. But the sad thing about it is we thought that was the nice fancy thing, the pictures of the dolls. We didn't know that people actually bought the dolls and the dolls were the collectibles. We thought our little binder of ads was super fancy.
Yeah, right. Mm. Are they like the old-fashioned porcelain dolls?
Yeah, they're like, you know, they come with different themes. They'd be like a, you know, a country doll and an Asian doll. And,
yeah, because Emma's 75, so they are the really old-fashioned porcelain dolls.
Yeah, yeah. I am 75 after that game, that is true. Right, well, my childhood was clearly just as depressing as the Mariners' season, so let's go on and talk about that and cheer ourselves up.
Sounds good.
Let's start with the basics and let Fox Sports do the hard work, and I'll throw you to the highlights.
It is a derby with a difference, at least compared to the ones in the recent past, and not just because it's a Wednesday night. For once, it is the Central Coast Mariners who come into this fixture as the team in the better form, albeit with a miserly 2-game unbeaten run behind them. The Newcastle Jets on the back of 3 straight losses and just 1 point from a possible 15. See if they can still get in front. Here's Kate Sheppard, the bounce favours him over the goalkeeper, and it's cleared virtually off the line by Jonathan Asprow to deny the Englishman. Jets well on top now. Space at a premium. Ooh. That was a little bit naughty by Clisby, and Georgeski's unhappy. And bombing up here is Jack Clisby. Well, I'll tell you what, that's the Mariners' best chance of the first half. Clisby again, change of angle, chance for McGlinchey. And he just didn't get hold of it with enough power or direction. Petratos with the corner, headed towards goal by Sheppard. There's a scramble, that's a good save in the end by Ben Kennedy, and a goal kick is the verdict. Here they come again. Roy O'Donovan off the heads, left foot, squares it up, Sheppard doesn't miss this time. Newcastle Jets in front, and it's the man with the bandaged head, and they're not going to rule this one out. Ernie Merrick's team leads. Mariners building here, good ball by Melling. Clisby across the face, chance! Oh, Jordan Murray denied in the final instance by Ivan Vujica, who just got his body in the way somehow to deny what seemed a certain equaliser. It's this corner from Andrew Hall. Back post, off the frame of the goal, Connor Payne! And they can't scramble it over the line. Wow, how was that not 1-1? Jonathan Asprow at the back post. Didi Petratos is going to have a go, and it was a really good effort too. And Ben Kennedy, fortunately for the Mariners, equal to it, keeps them in the game. Blast on Sean Evans' whistle brings proceedings to a close. They did it ugly in the end. Grateful to the likes of Ivan Vujica and Lachlan Jackson. No wonder they share an embrace. Those two were as important.
All right, thanks for those highlights, Fox Sports. The biggest highlight of the game, I guess, was the goal. We did score the only one of the derby, which puts us, I think, we're a 5-game streak now in beating the Mariners, which is a good feeling.
Yeah, 5 in a row.
let's talk about the goal specifically as the highlight of the match. But let's start first with, how did it feel to beat the Coasties at home on a Wednesday night, Matt?
It was brilliant. I go to all the Central Coast games with a mate of mine from work who is a Mariners supporter. So I made sure that we had towels in the car, maybe because it was going to rain, maybe because it was going to cry. But either way, it was a good investment.
Did he cry?
No, I didn't, but he was close. Like, I'm pretty sure that if I had kept ribbing him, like, about Andrew Hull and that being their best player and, like, they had nothing since Arnold left, I'm pretty sure if I had kept going down that line that he probably would have shed a tear.
I'm pretty sure Mike Mulvey cries when he thinks about Andrew Hull as well.
I don't blame him.
I'm not that bad a person, but if I had kept, you know, poking it like that, I probably could have got a cheer.
Next time. Lukey, how did you feel, other than the aging?
Very relieved. It was definitely one of the more stressful derbies we've had in recent time. Definitely a big relief. I guess just down a similar path as Matt. I've got a few Coastie fans that play in my outdoor team. One of them didn't realise the game was on. So if that gives you an idea of how plastic they are, I think that's a pretty good indicator. And also, one of my desk buddies at work, he's a Mariners supporter. He's also a Liverpool supporter. And when Liverpool beat Man United last month, in the EPL, I came into work the next day and my desk was decorated in Liverpool gear. So given we won, I had to return to the favour today. He walked into a jet scarf on his desk, a picture of Roy hanging from his monitor, and a picture of Kane Shepherd scoring underneath a box that was on his desk that after he was already upset about the first two, he then lifted the box up and saw Shepherd, and that was brilliant.
I'm going to say you all hang out with way too many Coasties. I think we need to talk about the jet stream and the composition of our friend groups. This is way too much Coastie love for my liking, especially on a derby week. So we'll have words about that later, boys. You've mentioned the goal,
hey,
Luke.
Mitch wants to move down there, so it's not my fault.
Yeah, Mitch also wants to marry Matt Simon, so not the best argument. Well... Luke, you mentioned the goal, Kane Shepherd scoring. Do you want to talk us through it from your point of view as a spectator in the stands? How did you see that goal?
Okay, so I was at the other end. I was at the end. The Coasties were attacking in the second half. So from my viewpoint, we had a corner that landed on Shepherd's head and he hit it at Kennedy. Kennedy sort of palmed it back. There was a scramble and somehow they got a goal kick out of it. I don't know. From the goal kick, Kennedy, forgetting that he's moved down the coast and isn't teammates with Cowby anymore, hits it straight to Cowby. Cowby heads it. Dimmy flicks it up over the defence. Roy runs onto it, puts a neat little tidy cross into the centre, and Shepherd taps home completely unmarked. Kennedy in no man's land as per usual. And lots of planes flying around because Roy ran one way, flying, and Shepherd ran the other way. So good times.
Delightful. Lots that was a good reenactment.
Flying around because we all threw our hats in the air.
Your jet-shaped
hats? I'm saying lots of planes flying around because we all threw our hats in the air.
Oh, yeah. Well, jet, I didn't. Jet, I don't wear hats, so.
Jet-shaped hats.
I didn't know that.
Jet-shaped hats. Come on, Laurie.
We know you're listening, Laurie. Jet-shaped hats, make them happen.
Did you like my description of the goal? I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, no, I was just saying I'm glad that I let you do it because I would not have been nearly as detailed, poetic, or as scathing of Ben Kennedy. So you did that very well. You did miss out the one point of contention that it was VAR checked and that Mike Mulvey is pretty convinced that it was offside.
Can I say, I'm positive it was offside. From the replay, I thought we were going to have another goal disallowed.
Matt, do you agree? Offside? Have we lost Matt?
Oh, hello.
I just thought you were thinking real hard for a second, but thank you, NBN Broadband. He's back.
Yeah, no, I'm watching the goal again as we speak, and it's definitely not offside. And I've only got one eye, and it's a jet-shaped eye, but it's definitely not offside.
Well,
just,
I guess
it's... Just like Topper's goal in the first half.
Topper's was definitely offside. That was a correct call.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that was very clearly, like, he was a good meter or two in front of everyone else.
I'm pretty sure he ran back and said, no, I'm offside. But we still had to play it out.
Yeah, well, I guess at the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether Roy was or wasn't offside. We've been on the shit end of some pretty borderline calls and the shit end of some very clear calls that have just gone the wrong way. So at the end of the day, I think, you know, even if it was, then maybe that makes up for one of the many others.
One of the many, yeah. I was going to say, like, how many times this season and last season have we had stuff like that happen to us? And, you know, it just, we never get the rub of the green. So to have it our way for once, yeah, you know, it sucks for them, but whatever, we deserve one of them.
But yeah. You know what's bad about that is that this whole VAR thing was supposed to clear up the getting one bad, getting one good.
Yeah.
Why don't we just go back to having referees? Because at least everyone would forget about it by the end of the game. Like, you know, you might have a bad refereeing decision. Now you have a bad VAR decision, and it's on record forever because you can view the footage. I don't think it's improved the game.
No, I think the other thing about the VAR is that, yeah, we scored, but even until they kicked off, and they're looking at the replays and stuff, you're still like, for me last night in particular, I was screaming, take the kick off, take the kick off, take the kick off, because if they take the kick off,
next phase of play.
It stands. Yeah, the next phase of play started, so it's fine. But until that point, it can still go back and everything. So, you know, if we don't have the VAR, then, yeah, you're disappointed, but at least you don't have, okay, the ref got it wrong, he's only human, but we've also got this piece of technology, which has also got it wrong. So...
How about that's what people can't.
And it takes the joy out of celebration, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, well, that's,
you know,
that's
the old
thing.
Rule. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's the thing, you know, it takes away from the celebration. Like, you're celebrating it, but you're like, but, you know, is this going to stand? Like, they're going to look at it, obviously, but, you know, so we're celebrating again after Topper's offside goal, which was offside. But what, like, you know, until that kickoff happens, can we really celebrate? Like, they're going to look at it again. Chances are, if it is, they'll overturn it, which, as I said, lucky for us, didn't happen this time. But it does take away from the goal. You're always thinking, are we celebrating for no reason? Like, they're just going to take this away from us? So, yeah, it takes away some of that emotion.
Yeah, it used to be don't celebrate till you've checked for the linesman flag, and now it's don't celebrate until you've waited for an icon to come up on the screen and flash for 10 seconds and everyone mill around, and then you can celebrate. And that's not quite as fun.
Nah.
Well, either way, it was a nice goal. Matt, do you agree that it was a good move of Roy not to try and pummel that one into the net himself, to do that sideways pass to Kane Sheppard?
When he did it, I didn't think so, but when it came off, yeah, definitely. I thought that his first touch off the head was too heavy and that it was just another one bites the dust, but it turned out to be, yeah, perfect. And it was probably the best option that he could have come up with, because there were three coasty defenders around him. Yeah, great finish, great goal, like, it just goes to show they should have been playing two up front to start with, because it was off Dimmy, who was playing number 10 with the flick on. So, yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, let's slide into that then. So we'll talk in a second about the specific players that were changes in the starting lineup. But let's talk about the formation specifically. That was a very different formation to what we typically play, right, Matt?
Yeah, it was. But the second half, I'm pretty sure that we went to four at the back. And I haven't had a chance to watch the whole thing. But, yeah, first half we played three at the back with two wing backs. We had But Cowburn and Jurgakovic as the midfielders, and then we had Dimi in front of them, and then the two up front, which was Shepherd and O'Donovan, which I think everyone has been calling for. I think the second half, Katrumbas actually sort of pushed forward into more of a midfield role. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to watch the game again, but that was my reading on it anyway. And I think it was Cowburn who flicked it on to Petrados. And Cowburn, like, didn't have that good a game last night, in my opinion, anyway. It was probably one of the only good things that he did. But, yeah, I was glad to see that Ernie was, you know, prepared to change formation, even though it was against Central Coast, and even though it meant that in the first half we were playing three at the back / five at the back and they didn't have Matt Simon. It seemed an odd time to do it, but at least he was prepared to change something.
Did you think the same, Luke? Nice to see something different?
Yeah, well, we're so used to, I guess, especially since Ernie's come in, we're used to him sticking with the same formation or, you know, the same players. So these wholesale changes that he made, that was completely, I think it took nearly everyone by surprise, a lot of them. You know, he did say there would be changes, but I don't think anyone would have really expected that many changes in those positions and everything. So to see a different formation, you know, that... Once I heard the lineup and everything, I was excited. As anyone who watched the pregame live stream would have seen. So I guess it just goes to show that, you know, we aren't just a one trick pony. We aren't going to be playing the same formation and doing the same set pieces and plays like that. It's going to be, you know, we have that adaptability that we can do this, we can do that in different circumstances.
Yeah, so let's talk specifically.
Sorry, Emma.
No, go ahead.
Sorry, Emma. Can you imagine same formation that we played first half, but with Kanter instead of Cowburn and with Hoffman as the right wing back and George Ashley as a left wing back? I mean, what held us back in the first half was that Buyitsa is naturally defensive. He did really, and don't get me wrong, I thought it was his best game, like close to the best game that he's ever played for the Jets, but he is naturally defensive. He doesn't look to get forward a lot, doesn't look to overlap, and, you know, his crosses are kind of forced. If we had Georgeski playing left and Hoffman playing right, and what I saw was that you had, like, Jackson, Katrumbas and Topper Stanley sitting deep. You had our two centre midfielders, which at that stage were Cowburn and Jurgakovic, pushing forward more than what they would normally. But our wing-backs weren't necessarily overlapping. Dimi sort of floating in the middle, and then you had the two centre guys. Like, if we had that formation but with our best team on the park, I'd love to see what it could do.
So I think that's an interesting point, because it's like he waited to be forced into a player change to experiment with the formation change. But you're saying it would have maybe been beneficial for him to experiment with this formation change with that kind of more core lineup that we've seen in previous weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we've done a 4-2-3-1 for too long, and everyone started to work it out, especially now that we don't have the pace that we did last year. Last year, at least, we had a couple of outlets like Chetness and Naboot to put the long ball through. If we weren't going to play through the midfield, that's the strength of that formation, you could put one over the top and you'd have a couple of quick guys that could pick it up and hold up the ball, because they were both strong on the ball. They could hold up the ball once they got through their lines and then look to play back. Now we don't have that. We've got Jair, who's not really quick. Dimi, who's definitely not quick. They're looking to pick up the ball to their feet. At least with that change, he was trying to encourage Georgeski to get forward. He did really well in the first half. Vajica to get forward, who, you know, was reasonable in the first half, but let's be honest, he is a very defensive-minded fullback. I think they did as good as what you could possibly, like, you know, possibly imagine they would in the positions that they were put in. But I think that if he had made those changes earlier on in the piece, rather than being forced because Hoffman was out and Bugard probably needed a rest, that would have been a better result.
All right, well, we'll talk about that as your wish list when we get up to the Perth game, I think, because we might get to see some of that. So let's talk about the actual personnel changes then that came with that formation change. So we had Lockie Jackson coming into the starting lineup, as you mentioned. He came straight. He wasn't even on the bench last week. So straight into the starting lineup. We had Vuitsa, Cowburn and Shepherd all moving from the bench last week into the starting lineup this week. And we had Vargas and Jair go to the bench from last week's starting lineup. Boogs omitted completely. Hoffy obviously not there, suspended. And Redenton also omitted previously in the starting lineup. So that's a pretty huge list of changes. And I guess you can argue it worked. You know, we came away with the points. Let's talk specifically about the boys who came in, whether or not you guys think that they did enough. So you've mentioned already, Matt, you didn't think Nick Cowburn had a cracker of a game. Do you think he's done enough to come back in again?
Sorry, Luke, I'm sure you've got an opinion on this, but and I'm a massive Cowburn fan, but no, I don't think he had a great game. I don't think him or UG, other than the first 20 minutes, had a great game.
I agree with Matt. I think if we're looking at where we probably struggled a lot, it was in the middle of the park. We couldn't get the ball forward for long, long periods of that second half. There just seemed to be a lot of misplaced passes or overhit passes. So the thing with Calby is who really can replace him? I don't think Rydenton's really done a whole lot himself with a lot more game time. And Kanarovsky's still injured, so... You know, is it a case of we stick with Cowby until Ben's back, or do we go back to Rydenton since he's played more games this year? I don't know. It's a tough one, I think.
I think that, and sorry, Emma. I think the difference with how we normally played to last game was that normally we have one holding midfielder that'll sit and we'll actually move back and get possession in between our two centre-backs. Like when we're, if we're not in possession, that's their expected role. This week we had two centre-backs that were both expected to get forward. And UG can do that. I don't think Cowburn necessarily can. Like Cowburn is a good distributor of the ball and he can make the tackle or block the passing lane, but he's not necessarily someone that is going to get the ball and beat a player and move forward. And I think that's what they were really looking for you know, this week.
Yeah, and I think maybe the change in formation puts a bit more pressure on the midfield as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because our wing-backs weren't necessarily being wing-backs. Like, especially in that first half, we were very lopsided. Vajica was hanging right back, and he was only just in front of our back three. Georgeski was pushing right forward. Georgeski could play the role of a wing back, but I'm not convinced that Vajica can.
Yeah. So Luke, do you agree? Do you think Ivan's done enough that we'll see him again next week, or do you think he had a good game or could have done better?
The one thing he has against him is his pace. There was too many times he just, with a head start, was losing out on foot races to the ball. And you look at, you know, Perth don't have Economides. He's still over in the UAE for the Asian Cup. But they've got Kianese. You know, they've got people who can put pressure on us. You know, they've got Davidson on one wing. They've got Franjic on the other wing. You know, we've got to be careful of those. So whether he thinks that, you know, with Hoff returning from suspension,
They've got Castro, and unfortunately, Vajica has proven to struggle against like really technical players.
Yeah, that's right. Like, all I could think about a lot of the time. There was one thing in particular. I don't think Ivan did a lot wrong yesterday. You know, pace. You can't do anything about that. So
agree.
That aside, the one thing that I was a bit there was one person maybe Miller, maybe. I can't remember who it was. But they ran at him and just got past him so easy that it just brought back nightmares of Arzani against him last year.
I think it was actually even worse. I'm pretty sure it was Hull that showed him up a couple of times last night.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, pace, that you can't do anything about that. Like, you can't blame the kid for that. So that aside, I don't think he really did too much else wrong. I do think though that with Hoffman returning from suspension, we may see Georgeski go back to the left, Hoffman on the right, or we might see Katrumbis there, who we'll wait and see.
Katrumbis is out next week, but we'll talk about that shortly.
He is too. Sorry, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the happy stuff then. Lockie Jackson came straight in, hadn't even been on the bench last week, had a freaking cracker. Who wants to talk about how great Lockie Jackson is?
What a legend.
The Badirim Beckenbauer.
He's been played out of position so many times. He's copped so much shit from fans, and for him to actually see him get a go at centre-back, even though it was a left-sided, centre-back as far as a back three, it was so good. Like, he actually looked like a player.
Luke, you may also rave.
Okay. The Badirim Beckenbauer, there you go, Anthony. He was awesome. I don't know how him or Voyota made some of those goal-saving tackles last night. They saved us. They saved us so much last night.
I'm going to say not only were some of Lockie Jackson's saves incredible saves, they were ones where he easily could have fouled the player in trying to make those saves. And he managed to do it elegantly and get away with it every time.
that's right.
Boogot.
So that exactly. Cough you got there, Matt.
I have the same cough. Exactly the same cough. No, I think Lockie Jackson did a great job.
Bit of phlegm.
The one that I can, and you referenced this one last night, Dr. Emma, the one where Payne's standing there with no one in front of him on the 6-yard line, basically, open goal. And from nowhere, you just see Lockie Jackson stick out his go-go gadget leg and just hawk it around, and it goes well out. I don't know how they did it.
It truly was a go-go gadget leg.
It was. There was, from memory, at least 3 times that someone from our team, either Lockie or Voyager, saved it on the line. You're lucky if you get one of those a game. How'd we get 3? It's crazy.
Absolutely.
Because it was the Mariners.
True.
Oh, yeah. I think it was still a good effort, regardless of who that opposition was.
It was a great effort, but if it was going to happen to anyone, it would happen to the Ospreys.
All right, let's talk quickly about Kane Sheppard, obviously the goal scorer, also coming into the starting lineup previously from the bench. Everyone's been keen to have him in the starting lineup, and I think we can agree he performed. Also got a knock to the head, was bleeding quite badly from the back of his head in the first half, and managed to soldier on for the entire game and still score the goal after that. Is everyone as happy with Kane Sheppard as I am, Matt?
Can we put out content warning here? He was fucking brilliant. Like, absolutely brilliant. Like, I've not wanted anything more than to see him and Roy play up front together. And it proved exactly why I've been saying it all year. Like, just to see someone that was going to absolutely batter them, and Roy, who was going to absolutely harry them for the entire game. I thought it was perfect. I thought that if we could do that every single week, we wouldn't have a shooting accuracy of 11%.
And Lukey, you're glad to see that Kane Sheppard has signed a contract extension to stay with the Jets?
Did my Twitter profile picture give that away?
Maybe just a little bit. Are you getting a tattoo next?
We'll wait and see.
I've already got the tattoo.
I think there's lots of good things about this. So I finally saw someone, I think it was the Jets or the A-League or maybe both of them last night, said something along the lines of Sheppard leads the flock with regards to his goal.
Prime for puns. Yeah.
with all our signings in the off season, I think the one that I was most excited to see was Shepherd, given his performance with Avondale in the NPL Victoria. Maybe it was his first start against Brisbane where he scored just on half time. Yeah, he's shown time and time again when he has been on the field that he can pop up and do something. He's got 3 goals now. He's got 2 assists. That sort of return from someone who before this season hadn't played at this level is crazy. Going back to something that we all joked about, and we can joke about more given the statement that came out the last couple of days, the trial that that Usain Bolt had. It just goes to show what a joke that was. You got players like him in the NPL who could be given a trial. Instead, it's given to this has-been or never was, who's only here for one last quick paycheck. So to have someone from the NPL step up and perform and get a contract extension, which I think he deserved, and we're used to seeing people get the dreaded contract extension and drop off immediately. He's done the complete opposite, and good on him.
Now, I think this is interesting and a really good point. I will say, yes, the Mariners are a joke. That Bolt thing is going to go down in history as one of the stupidest things that ever happened in the A-League. But I think this is a really good point that Kane Shepherd's out. He's our success story for signings this season. And that segues nicely into what we're going to talk about next, the fact that Jair started from the bench. Shepherd has shone more as a signing coming up from the lower league than what Jair has been kind of touted as our important saviour. So I think that's really interesting and says a lot about local development and what we should be and could be looking for. So let's go then to Jair and Vargas. Both of them, Ben.
Hang on. I'd say Matt Miller, who's played for the worst team in the competition, has shone more than what Jair has.
Ooh, all right. Well, tell us what you really think about Jair, Matt. Go.
Oh, look, I'm not saying he's the worst player in the competition, but I'm certainly not saying that he deserves an import spot. I've made my feelings clear on Redenton, but unfortunately Cowburn didn't really prove those over the weekend. But I don't think that... Like, I think if you're going to have an import player, they have to be head and shoulders above what you can get from the current league or from the NPL. And I think that Matt Miller has been better than what Jair has. I'd take him every day of the week over Jair. I don't necessarily think that Redenton has been head and shoulders above what we can get from the local leagues either.
So you agree that he should have been benched? Do you think he should even be on the bench?
It's really tough to see without seeing all the training sessions and whatnot. I think if it came down to it and you had Kanarovsky and UG fit, that you'd pick both of those two. But And I've been saying that I'd love to see Cowburn start more and blah, blah, blah. But after last night, especially with the way they were deployed, like which was further forward, I'm not necessarily sure that I think that Cowburn suited to that role. He wasn't great last night, let's be honest.
And can I just ask, when Jair did come on, Matt, did you think he was impactful as a sub, or did you think that was a bit of a wasted sub?
Anytime you've got to bring a visa player on as a sub, it's a waste of a sub.
All right. Lukey, what did you think of Vargas starting from the bench? So he came on as the earlier sub. What did you think about that decision?
We've said for a couple of weeks now, probably since the last derby, that Vargas hasn't looked himself. Like he's just dropped off a lot from what he's shown to us, last season and the start of this season. So I thought him starting from the bench was probably all right. Let's give someone else a go. Let's give, these guys who haven't really had much of a chance or, have been impressing from the bench a starting go. So when the squad was announced and Vargas and Jair were named on the bench, I was okay with that. When I'll go back to Jair as well in a second, when Ronnie came on, the first two passes he tried to make in his first 10 minutes on the field went to Mariners players. You can't be having that at all, let alone from your marquee visa player. Same as Jair, he comes on the field, gets called offside twice in 3 minutes. Now, I don't think he was offside for one of them at least. but it's nothing new for him. He's been called offside from the wing a billion times this season. And as Matt said, you want your visa players to be head and shoulders above anyone else, like any of your domestic players. You're paying these guys more money to come here and everything. If they're going to take a spot in the squad, a visa spot, you want them to be something special. If they're not special, you may as well save the visa spot and just get someone who can do the job just as well that is Australian. And I don't think, you know, Jair, he can be impactful. You know, he does all right at times, but he's not worth a visa spot taken up from the bench. And I don't think he should be starting. I think Shepherd should be starting above him.
All right, so also coming on off the bench was Mitch Austin, quite late in the game, but had enough game time to demonstrate to me that he probably shouldn't get much more anytime soon. Am I being harsh, or did you see it the same way, Matt?
Unfortunately, yeah, I probably did. But like in his defence, he got behind their defence. I think if it was Jair that was in his position and running onto that ball from, was it Dimi? Granted, he skied it, but if it was Jair, if it was Thurgate, maybe not Champness. Champness is pretty quick, but if it was either of those other guys, I don't necessarily think they would have been able to beat the player. So I think, what's his face? Austin is still almost worth a gamble because of the amount of goals he scored against us and because he offers that something a little bit different. I don't think he's ever going to be as like consistent as Naboot, but like Naboot wasn't anything special before he necessarily joined the Jets and got a good run of form either.
I guess he wasn't special till he was.
He was all right.
Amen.
He was never... We didn't buy him because he was amazing. We bought him and then suddenly he was amazing. So, yeah, I guess you are right, Matt. You never do know. I just thought Austin looked a little sluggish.
Even in his first, three, four, five games that he played for us, he still wasn't amazing. It was just something that he came into. I still remember that very wet and cold FFA Cup game where I think Wayne Brown scored against Victory, like at Magic Stadium, and I think that was the first time I'd seen Naboot played for the Jets, and I was saying to one of my mates, like, yeah, blah, 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 ex-Victory player, he's been overseas, he'll be nothing special, at least we've got Hull. I was so wrong.
You know, this is getting recorded, right? I'm
so
that's going to haunt you to your deathbed, isn't it?
Yeah, but at least I'll admit it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I would keep doing that.
No, that's something that, yeah, I'd keep that to yourself as much as possible.
Yeah, maybe an overshare. right, let's talk about who was missing then. Hoffey, obviously out due to suspension. We're not going to talk about that anymore because I think that's been done to death. Boogs was a bit of a surprised omission. He was rested, no injury. I'm just going to echo what may have been hinted at earlier. Don't think we missed him. Does anyone want to elaborate on that?
I think if Boogs was there, he's not making those tackles like Lockie Jackson did.
And Topper Stanley, good job as captain, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there wasn't a whole lot for him to, I guess, sort of do as captain, but, you know, he's definitely the natural successor or next in line from Boogs. So, that I expected.
So Joey was on the bench, didn't get a look in either. Has been on the bench 2 weeks now. Hasn't gotten a look in. Do you think we'll see him play anytime soon?
He played last week.
Joey played last week.
Oh, did he? I didn't watch that game. I'm so silly.
No, you were. You're
so he didn't do well last week. He didn't do well last week. Wasn't invited back.
I think he didn't really get much of a chance last week. I think he came on either just before or just after Hoffy got sent off, and by that point, there wasn't a whole lot that we were doing. I think the reason they probably didn't risk him last night or on Wednesday night, you saw the sort of tackle that Clisby did on Georgevski. Going into a derby where you've had 45 minutes of youth league plus 15 minutes of A-League, I know you've got to build your match fitness up somewhere, but I don't think that was the game for it.
Good point. Excellent segue into my next point. Youth League, tiny Mariners player. What's that about?
I didn't realize they let 12-year-olds play in the A-League, but whatever.
Yeah, but he was good. So
he was good. Like, he was good.
Yeah. No one can really take that away from him. Yeah, he was good. He was better than Cowburn and UG. So yeah,
better than Hall as well.
Absolutely.
I just could not get over how small he was, though. And I'm the one who normally gets annoyed when, like, Andy Harper and Simon Hill bang on about heights in headers and stuff, but he wouldn't even bother with a header. I did notice he did do one where he kind of, like, darted down between two players and ran off with the ball. Yeah, that kid blew my mind. I thought he was 12. He is, in fact, 19. That kid can dribble.
There you go. That's older than I expected.
Was he really short or was his shirt really big?
Both.
Bit of A, bit of B.
I saw a photo of him on Twitter.
I found his Twitter account, and there was a photo of him with I think the former Western Bears keeper. They must have been teammates or something. And whether this guy's the keeper's huge, I don't know, but he was at least 2 feet above this guy.
I've heard through the grapevine that he's actually going to be a real talent, and same as the was it Peter Kakaris that they brought in late? Apparently he's got the goods as well, so I think I'll put that in our group chat that he's meant to be red hot, and I've speaking to a few people that have played against him and played with him, and yeah, apparently the Mariners unfortunately have got a few really good youth prospects, so
well, they do, but at this stage, necessarily, you know, bad thing. No, but you see what how they treated their good youth prospect last year. Like, if they do that again, then he's going to end up elsewhere. So,
is it Wales?
Yeah, Wales.
Yeah, good. I thought you guys were saying too many nice things about the Coasties. Then I'm glad we ended this with how shit they are. So, that is correct assessment. So instead of flipping and talking about Perth separately, we've just talked about what we thought was good in the lineup, what we thought was wrong with the lineup. How do we see it's going to change next week? So we've got Hoffie coming back from suspension. We've got Katrumbas out with planned medical treatment. And other than that, Boogs should be coming back in. Interestingly, the A-League had the squad announcements headlined with Newcastle's hopes bolstered with return of captain. I don't think they actually saw the game or know anything about our team, whoever wrote that. What do we think is going to happen, same or different, this week?
I'd love to see the first half formation stay the same, but Boogs come in for Katrumbas and the wing-back switch around. I'd also love to see Kantorowski come back, but obviously that's not going to happen. If we're going to continue to play with the two more advanced midfielders, as much as I hate to say it, I think that Redenton did a better job than what Cowburn necessarily did. I think Cowburn can fill the Kantorowski-type role and sit deeper, but he wasn't spectacular in attack. Vijica was fantastic on the back line, but he doesn't offer much sort of overlapping. So I'd rather see Georgevski over there. And you know how good we all know how good Hoffman is moving forward. So I think that if we're going to keep that same formation as the first half, which I'm still not convinced about, but because they don't have Economides, and I don't know why we went with three at the back, which turned into five at the back against the worst team in the competition when they don't have their striker. But if that's what we're going to do, a couple of changes like could actually turn into something beneficial. Otherwise, if we go back to the 4-2-3-1, then I think they're pretty sort of standard changes. Like, we'll go back to the same lineup that we had 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Lukey, you agree?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I don't think it's... I guess people coming in, you know, as I said earlier, Voice up against Chianese's playing the season of his life. It's the Popovich effect. He gets average players and turns them into Messi almost. How Chianese tore Sydney apart, I'll never know. But having his sort of attacking prowess currently, as Matt said, Castro's there. They've got Davidson as well. It's probably more a game where you'd want, especially away from home and in Perth, where we're notorious for failing, you'd probably want your experienced heads. So Georgeski, Hoffman on the wings.
Yep, notorious at failing in Perth is right. It's something like we've only won twice in 22 against them.
Yeah, but we won twice in four as well, so...
Yeah, you can look at it that way if you're an optimist. Perth also this season.
Let's be realists. Like, I mean, you roll a dice six times, you're going to get a 6-1 in six times. So, yeah.
Yeah. Perth this season, though, they've only lost one game. Four draws.
They've had two draws. They've had two draws in the last two.
Oh, you're such an optimist. This is adorable. Listening to you, I feel like we're in with a chance. I'm very impressionable, clearly. It's a short turnaround, though, for us and for Perth. So Perth played on...
They're used to it. We've played six games in 5 days or something, if you listen to the media.
Yep, that math checks out. I've done the algorithm there. You are correct. So do you think the short turnaround is going to affect us? You guys didn't mention many... restings in your prospective lineups? Do you think that anyone's going to need to come out for a rest, or do you think that's what was Boogs having this week off was about?
I think if you were looking at people having a rest, the three that sat out were probably the three that, well, I guess four really, but in particular Boogs, Vargas and Jair, they're probably the three that you probably do need a rest. You know, you could probably say Dimi as well, but I think
Dimi looks fit as he was still running definitely running the game out at the end of that one. And yeah, he's really impressed me as far as like his fitness levels. Like Brisbane was the game where I thought everyone struggled, and he ran that out without a problem.
But I guess, as you said, with a short turnaround, you know, they played directly after us, straight after us, but they were at home. So we've got to make the 5-6 hour flight over there. They've already rested, so we lose a day, they get a day on us. So, you know, we've got that to contend with as well. We don't have the luxury of a full week of recovery and preparation.
The way I look at it is that the second game in close proximity is harder to play than the third one. And we're at the stage now where we've played so many games in such a short time that the guys are probably used to the quick turnaround. If we hadn't been playing this week, like, you know, midweek fixtures constantly, and this was the first time that we'd had to play, like, you know, two games in 4 days, it would probably be a lot worse than where we are right now, because the guys that are playing week in, week out, which is probably, what, O'Donovan, Topper Stanley, UG, you know, who else is there? Georgevski, you know, and Petrados, they are all super fit. And they're probably at the stage now where their bodies are used to getting that 2 to 3 day, you know, recovery period. Yeah, if it was the first time that they had to do it, I think it would actually hurt them more than what it would now.
Quite possibly. I should mention too, I forgot to, when we were talking about the game, three of our players made into the A-League Team of the Week this week. So we had Dimi, Kane Shepherd, and Lockie Jackson all in Team of the Week. So that's pretty impressive. And I didn't ask anyone their Man of the Match. Would anyone like to give me one of those real quick?
I said on the post-game stream last night, Lockie Jackson.
I also said Lockie Jackson. So peer pressure, Matt, are you also saying Lockie Jackson?
I last night said Moss or Lockie Jackson, so yeah, I will be pressured into Lockie Jackson. He was, yeah, pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah, pretty good.
Pretty good.
I also forgot to do the post-match press conference from Ernie to find out what he thinks, because you know he's a professional and gets paid for this, unlike us who are just talking out of our butts. So let's just pause for a moment and go to Ernie Merrick and hear what he thought about last night's game.
Result, no doubt, Ernie, but what about the performance?
Yeah, it was a bit of a reversal, wasn't it? Normally we put on a really good performance and lose. Today we had a really good first 25 minutes. And then when Kane got injured and was off for a while getting his head sorted, they got a bit of momentum up the second part of the first half. And then I thought we started off pretty well in the second half, but towards the end they had their chances and we rode our luck, which is a change for us. So it was good. It was a bit of an ugly win at the end. I think someone asked for an ugly win. There you go. Anything else you want?
That's, I suppose, in that good desperation.
Yeah, but that's what we've got to do. We've got to close out the game, and that, and I had a lot of attackers on the bench. It was just the way it worked out regarding who needed a break and who was fresh to come in. But everyone that came on did a job well. Ronnie sat a bit deeper in midfield. He's terrific at keeping the ball, which we didn't do well in the second part of the first half. But when Ronnie came on, we kept the ball a little bit better. They were always a threat, and they took risks, of course. They threw numbers forward. We could have caught them out a couple of times, once with Dimmy, once with Mitch Austin. If we'd caught them out, that was it all over. But when it's 1-0, they've got nothing to lose, and that's why we were under the pump. But we fought and defended really well, and that's what it's about sometimes.
Mike mentioned that he thought that the goal was as offside in the lead up to the goal, and also there was a handball there at the end of it.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's unusual for that not to go against us. Well, of course, I don't see the replays, so I don't know whether it was offside or not. It must be tough for them. I mean, nothing seems to fall for them. That's the first thing that's fallen for us for a while. So, what can I say?
You probably drew a bit of luck there, were you?
Oh, certainly are. My goodness. And there's always luck in the game, but the main thing is we've been fighting hard every week, and we got 3 points for fighting hard, and sometimes that's what you need. So that's one in a row.
A lot of changes aside, obviously the schedule, but all those people rested, wouldn't
you
like to come back?
Yeah, they're all, of course, putting their hands up, and we do this testing for where they're at. Alertness, sharpness, explosive ability, and the scores are pretty. I think Nigel was the best scorer for the year, so I don't know if he's fixing the scores or not, but he'll be back in now. I felt we missed his organisation a wee bit at the back, so he'll be a good plus. And as far as I know, there's no injuries. Even Ben's not far away. Jason now comes off his suspension, and he needed a rest anyway, so. It's good. I've got a lot of boys to pick from, but again, it's another away game over in Perth. But I think we'll cope quite well, given that I rested so many of them. It's a bit of a risk, but it worked.
Two pretty massive blocks from Jackson Boyd's out there.
Yes.
And defensively, it would have been nice to see the two defenders that you brought on to dig deep.
Yes, that's right. I thought Lachlan was quite a little bit of positioning towards the end because of the numbers coming forward, which wasn't really his fault, but he kept fronting up and getting the tackles when it counts. And Ivan was the same. He did a terrific job at left back, and he got forward a lot in the first half, but I went from a back three to a back four, and then he was more conservative and more of a defender in the second half, and he did the job. And when I put Mitch on, I said, their right back's coming forward a lot, Miller, so you just go over and do a job there. And he did it well, and then he got forward and got that break on. If he'd have scored, he'd be a very happy person, and my heart would probably be a little bit better than it is at the moment.
Do you think that win tonight can maybe be a bit of a turning point in the season?
Well, that's the hope, isn't it? You're hoping that it's the start of gaining some momentum and going from here and kicking on. But two tough away games, Perth and then the Wanderers, but we can do it. We can do it.
How much of a step up at Perth away from home going to be on the game tonight?
Oh, at the top of the league still, aren't they? So it's going to be a tough game, but I feel as though we can match anyone. And when we played them here, we dominated the game and lost, if you recall, I think twice as many scoring shots as they had. So we're capable of taking anyone on the day. And as I say, now that we've rested a few ready to come back in, I think we'll have a very strong squad for Perth. It's probably worked out really well for us in that rotation.
And if you were to go there and get a win, that'd be...
Well, that's the plan. Go over, get a win at Perth, and all of a sudden you start building momentum.
Confidence and all that sort of stuff.
All of it. Belief in your ability, yeah. All right, guys. There's a beer waiting for me somewhere.
All right, thank you for that again. Whoever we steal that from, probably also Fox Sports. One thing I also want to mention, Luke, you mentioned the long flight over to Perth. About 12 coasties made the long trip down the F3 last night for the Derby. Free tickets and a recent win apparently couldn't lure a very big...
long way on a donkey.
I'll pay that.
Yeah.
You look at how many they brought. You look how many they brought last year. You look how many we took down to the coast the last couple of times we've been down there. The difference is our last two home derbies have been midweek night games. And, you know, we talk about, you know, the A-League or the FFA or whatever, not giving us a chance or whatever. This is the thing. Why are we doing this for the second year in a row on a weeknight when everyone's back at work?
Yeah, but how many?
Don't make excuses. They brought 10 times the number of people as what they've scored goals this year.
But how many coasties have day jobs?
It's just, you know, you talk about, you know, we had 9,000. If this was on a weekend, there'd be more people, not just from the coast, but also from Newcastle, who have other commitments, who work, who have school, whatever the next day. I know it's school holidays, but whatever. It goes both ways. It's not just them that's not turning up, it's also us. I think there was Keith Urban up the road as well.
Yeah, I was really confused leaving the stadium. I was like, why is there so much traffic?
That almost kept me away.
When we have the game on the 16th of March, much, much more people. And, you know, they'll probably still have the same numbers. So we'll just outnumber them once again.
But everyone wants to talk about this, our kind of bullshit run of fixtures. Do we have to play better football before we can expect to get put on better nights for fixtures? And also,
football last year.
There were three games Wednesday night, so it wasn't just us who got
plastics. Plastics. Plastics.
Plastics.
If we had to play better football and get to the grand final before people turned out. Like, what a crock of shit. If you actually want to support the team and care how they go, like week in, week out, you'll make the time in your schedule
those are two different points, though. The fans showing up and supporting the team is a different question to the A-League commercial decision about where they put fixtures. They have knock-on effects for each other.
For me, it's better. I'd prefer they put everything on a Sunday afternoon because I don't have to take time off work. This year was the first year where I actually organised with work that I was allowed to finish early just to go to the games, only because I've been in the same job now for years and years, and they understand what a commitment that I've got to going and seeing the Jets. But yeah, like, if people really cared about what was going on and really wanted to support, you'd find a way, you'd make a way. But I think the whole because it's on at 7:30, we're not on a Saturday night, we're not going to turn up is really it's an excuse, but it's not a reason. Like, you know, care about the club, care about the future of the club and how it's going to go, you'd turn up anyway.
Well, well done to the 9,200 Jets fans and 12 Coastie fans who did show up. I thought that was a good turnout for a potentially stormy night. I did pack my raincoat last night, was very glad not to get rained on. So we've talked about us and...
I'll be honest. Sorry, Emma. I brought two towels as well. Not because I was worried about getting rained on, but because Al, the guy that drove me there, I was worried about all his tears in the car on the way home.
He said that twice now, guys. So he clearly really wants us all to know that Al is a massive sook. So, Al's a sook, everybody. You heard it here on Jetstream. Right.
He listens to this just because
he's the listener
that we've got on iTunes.
Glad you didn't cry or did cry, whatever. Real men can cry, it's fine, especially when they're Coastie fans, probably expected. Anywho, let's talk about Perth then and what Perth are going to bring at us. You've mentioned already that Economides is obviously still going on international duty. Marcella is out with a thigh injury, and they've got Sporanovic coming back into their squad this week. Other than that, it's all the same as last week with some pretty good players. Alex Grant, Jason Davidson, Ivan Franjic, Castro, Djulbic. Fabio Ferreira even is in their squad. You're doing all right if you can play Ferreira, I reckon. Scotty Neville in the squad. They've got Liam Reddy, obviously. Kilkenny, he'll score goals. Who do we need to watch out for, and what are they going to throw at us? Lukey.
I think they'll be very hungry to score a goal. They've gone the last two without scoring. Two games in particular at home for the second one last night against Adelaide that they would have wanted to get a result in, to keep that gap between them and Sydney in victory. So I think they'll come out guns blazing. I reckon we'll be treated to another typical Popper shithousery game. We've got to make sure they don't get an early goal. Otherwise, we're going to put up with 80 minutes of time wasting again, because apparently they can get away with it. I think Keo was rested. He started on the bench last night. I expect that he'd start. There's all this talk about whether he was going to City in a swap deal with Fornaroli, but I'm pretty sure that's done and dusted now that it's not happening. So I think he actually captained them a couple of games back as well. So I think he'll probably want to come in, especially if he's up against Boogs, who he just tore to shreds when they came to Newcastle last month. I reckon it'll be a tough one for us.
Yeah, damn it. They've got so many good players that I didn't even list Keo when I was listing off who I thought we were going to have to watch out for. So that is a bit of a worry, yeah. As I said, Perth are having a very good season, so it is going to be a difficult match. We've talked a little long, so let's just go straight to what are your tips for that game, boys?
I'm going to say 1-1 because I don't want to tip against the Jets.
Yep. Draw's not going to get you many points in our tipping competition, but I think that is a very good call and probably optimistic. I actually think we're probably going to lose 2-1. Matt, what do you reckon?
I'm going because every time I put money on against the Jets, we win. I'm going 2-0 to Perth, and I think that Keogh will get them both. And I will put $20 on that result, and I'm quite happy if we lose.
Look at you playing the mind games. Let's cover off.
I'm quite rest. Happy. I lose the money, I should clarify.
It's a clever way to go. Let's
Hey, either way, I'm happy.
Let's cover off the
what rest. What if it's a draw? Sorry, Emma.
Yeah.
Well, then we still get a point. We still get a point closer to Wellington and Adelaide, and it's not a bad result. So, yeah, whatever.
Okay, like, fair enough.
If you're saying that, a draw is a bad result, I'd take a draw for most of the games that we've played this year.
I'm not saying it's a bad result. I was just like, well, you don't get the 3 points, you don't get the money. That's okay. I'll take a draw.
Let's cover off the rest of the round. Brisbane Roar versus the Wanderers Friday night in Brisbane. Scores for that, please, gentlemen. Lukey.
Wanderers to win 2-0.
Luke, are you on drugs? Are you okay?
Surely the Wanderers can't capitulate again.
Oh, you're
not,
so
not
cute.
To Brisbane. Not
Matt,
to Brisbane.
Are you also
Brisbane
on drugs?
Been...
So who was at home there?
Brisbane.
Okay, I'm going 1-0 Brisbane.
I'm going 2 broken legs, 0-0 draw, and the stadium burns down.
Yeah, well, I reckon the stadium will flood before it burns down.
Because that dumpster fire has to spread from the Wanderers eventually. We also have Wellington Phoenix on Saturday afternoon. They're at home hosting Melbourne City. I'm going to tip a 1-1 draw for that because I still think Phoenix have got a lot in them this season. Matt, what do you think?
1-0 Phoenix.
Leaky?
I'll go 1-0 Phoenix too.
On Saturday.
And Christian for the score.
Very specific again.
I captained him and he got 0 points.
I captained Lockie Wales and he got 0 points. So I know you're feeling.
Whoever I captain does
not score. So I might actually put Keo in the team and put him as captain just to guarantee that it's, we've got a chance.
Look, I did that twice with Lafondra when he played the Jets and he hasn't scored against us yet. So
which stage of grief is it when you start making bargains with the universe? I think that's the one you've just reached. Let's instead talk about the Big Blue. Big Blue, that's what it's called, isn't it? Melbourne Victory versus Sydney. It makes me want to choke in my mouth. Victory hosting Sydney, Saturday night. What do you reckon, Matt?
The big question is, does Toivonen and Honda play? I think Honda's still out.
I think Toivonen is back.
Is Honda so, even real? Like, is he ever going to play again? Is this just a scam?
I heard he was, they like, originally they thought he'd be back by now. Like, this was the game he'd be coming back in.
Originally, they thought he was going to only be out for 2 weeks as well. And I think that's a bit of a mind games that they knew that he was going to be out for a long time and didn't want to let on. I don't think he'll be back this week. I think Toivonen will be back this week. And I'm pretty sure that Melbourne will win. I think that if Tratt's still out and Calwa's got to play right back, that they are going to carve him up. So I'm going to say 3-0 to victory.
Sorry, can what was up with Toivonen?
Toivonen was rested slash like a niggle, I think, from what I read last week.
Because I haven't had a game since then. Or is that for this week?
I think that he had like he missed the bye, but I'm pretty sure that he had a niggle as well.
Okay.
I transferred him out for this round because of the bye.
It wasn't an actual bye. The rounds were just played in different weeks. Let's be clear, there's no byes in the A-League. The round was just played out of sync. That messed up the fantasy for everyone. Everyone was very upset, but no actual byes.
It was a terrible week for fantasy.
It's been a terrible week for fantasy for like the last 16 weeks. So, what a shit interface that Fox Sports have got on. Like, we can thank them for their broadcast and then thank them for their media coverage and whatnot, but their fantasy is useless.
It used to be good as well. I remember doing it like 2010-11 and it was awesome, like the EPL one. But
right now, Fox Sports, your fantasy A-League sucks.
Yeah.
Certified.
Too true. Does anyone want to give me a tip for that game, though? You've said Melbourne are going to win, Matt?
3-0.
Lukey?
I'll go victory 2-1.
Excellent. I'm going to go a 2-2 draw because the big blue makes me want to spew. The Coasties are off to Adelaide. Weird times for the Sunday night games this week. That's a 6 o'clock game before we follow on with an 8 o'clock game. So Adelaide are hosting the Coasties. I'm pretty sure. Are we all just going to go Bodie specials for this one and move on?
Yeah, go for it.
Matt, a Bodie special?
The one thing I've been wrong about the Adelaide this year is that Goodwin's form didn't fall away as far as what I thought it would. He did go through a bit of a shit run, but I don't think I can quite go about his special. I'll say 3-0 to Adelaide.
Okay, fair enough. I'll take that. That's close enough to Birdie special. All right, well, let's leave the men then. Talk very quickly about the women, whose season is basically over. There's 2 rounds left. They have no chance of making the finals. Katie Stengel has gone home to Utah. We've got all kinds of players out. Ved Egmond's out, injured, all kinds of injuries. Basically don't have a team left. Larissa Crummer's moving back to the forward line apparently this week when they go away to play Adelaide. Do we have anything we can hope to get out of the last 2 games of the seasons for the girls' boys, or are they just wasting time now?
We can hope to get no more injuries.
Yes, I agree. The other one is, I mean, I don't know who else is around the final spot, but if we can stop teams from making finals, that's always fun. That's always a good thing to do when you're out, ruin everyone else's season. So I think Adelaide's sort of around there. I haven't looked at the table recently, so I don't know what it currently looks like. But from
So Adelaide are just 2 points off the top 4 at the moment.
Okay. But where's Sydney and City in all this?
So we've got Glory and Victory on 19. We've got Sydney on 18, Brisbane Roar on 17. So that's your top 4 for the finals for the women. Then we've got City on 16, Adelaide on 15, and Canberra United on 12. We're on 10, and then Western Sydney Wanderers all the way down on 4. Melbourne Victory also have a game in hand because the women's do actually have byes. We have no chance of making it. If the Wanderers win their last 2 games and we lose our last 2, we could theoretically tie for last place with them, but our goal difference is looking much better.
How many points are the Wanderers on?
4.
Did they win a game?
1 win, 1 draw.
Oh, man, I had no idea they won.
Just the
way. There you go.
Yeah, they won last week, didn't they, or the week before?
Oh, I must have missed it. They're playing at the moment. They're on. They were playing Perth when I when you called, Emma. I think it was 2-1 to Perth, though. So I don't know if that was their second last game. It probably was.
Yeah, well, our girls have literally no chance, and you're right, Luke. All they can do now is be deciding factors in what else happens. And, yeah, it would be nice if we could get away with no more injuries, and hopefully Crummer can put in a good performance. And
Let's knock the Central Coast out of the W League finals.
Yeah, well, at least we're beating them. Let's look at it like that. At least we've got a team. Okay, yep. Have I missed anything important about the club or football life this week before we go?
We talked about Shepherd getting re-signed, didn't we? And Katrumbis.
Yes, we did talk about... Katrumbis extending his contract? Did we talk about that? No? Yes? Excellent. Glad he did. Everyone's
Jamie McLaren agreed. Going to Melbourne City. That's big news.
Confirmed?
It's confirmed on like the group chat, so I think Mitch said it, so...
We're uncertain if that is fake news or not. We might be breaking news. We might be spreading rumours. So, Google that one yourselves, listeners. And go ahead and tweet /Facebook Matt about it. Speaking of tweeting and
that
Facebook.
It was also mentioned, like, on the Covert Agent Twitter handle
Covert
that
Agent
there was
is
a big
they
move
they
for
said
a top
half
four
the They said that half the Socceroos were going to City, so...
No, they didn't. They were very careful. They said, we're talking to... agents from. So they weren't technically wrong.
It wouldn't surprise me if he goes there. Like if they can get a mutual with Fornaroli, then they've got a bit of money on the cap, and he'd be a good fit. Like we'd be screwed, but excellent.
At least it's not missing a striker.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, you interrupted me and ruined my seg. I was going to say while I was talking about Facebook and Twitter that we are a media empire, and you can find us on all the social medias as Jetstream Newey. And you can also find us doing Jetstream TV pre and post-match. And obviously, if you found us here, you already know we do a podcast. There's also NewcastleFootball.net, if you're not there already listening to this, where you can talk to some other Jets fans about Jets-related stuff. So thank you very much for joining me tonight, boys. Sorry for the little bit of laggy internet we've had here, making the conversation a little bit stilted, but you both did very well. I don't think we swore too much, maybe a little bit, but you know, with a coasty game it was to be expected. So Luke, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Emma.
Matt, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for blaming the internet, not me being slow to respond.
Yeah, well, sometimes I thought maybe you were just thinking very hard about the answer to a question when you did say, I'm just watching the goal now. I'm like, was he waiting to finish watching the goal to answer the question? But that's okay. Definitely everyone knows it's Malcolm Turnbull's NBN and not you. So thanks very much, Jets fans. I guess all that's left to say is go the Jets.
Go the Jets.
Go the Jets.
Wow, that was very...
But I'm a soul joker.
Can you just do yours again there, Matt? That was a very professional go to the Jets, Matt.
Cheers, thank you. It was the background noise that really made it.
Oh, it's nice that you thought that was a compliment. I was, yeah.